You have found your way into the last video store, the show where I, Alexi Toliopoulos, talk to cool and funny and interesting people about their favorite films in the style of an old school video store rental combo, including one staff pick recommendation from me based on our guest taste. And kicking off the year, we have been rewinding to revisit a bunch of our favorite episodes. And it's been very fun doing that, I would say, because I'm getting to revisit some great memories of great conversations, talking to friends about some of their favorite films. And this week's episode is a very clear example of exactly that. Producer M, this is one of the ones that you wanted to pick.
Yeah.
And this is with our friends from the Weekly Planet, Mr. Sunday Movies, James Clement and Nick Mason. I love this episode.
Yeah, it's such a good episode. I loved producing this episode.
From a distance, because I was in Melbourne.
Yes, you're in Melbourne. Yeah. I hate it when that happens. But it was just a really good episode, and I just didn't know much about them. And since then, I'm a fan. And it's just funny because this is maybe technically our most popular episode, yeah. I think so. By numbers,
because they've got such a lovely fan base that have been very supportive of me as well, I would say.
Yeah,
and I love doing their podcast. It's been a while since we have recorded a podcast together, me and these guys. We've wanted to recently. We have not been able to, but obviously they're going to come back on the podcast pretty soon, I would say. But in the meantime, we were all just together recently recording an episode of Mug, the most upsetting guessing game, Auntie Donna's improv show. Mm-hmm. I actually don't know when that's coming out, and I definitely am breaking like some kind of NDA saying that it's out, but it's okay, I'm sure. I don't know when that will come out, but I just want to let people know that if you love me and you love this episode, you love the Weekly Planet guys, we've recorded an episode of the Auntie Donna improv show, Most Upsetting Guessing Game. Hopefully that's coming out soon. But in the meantime, I'm putting this back out because I love talking to these guys about movies. I love the two-person episodes that I get to do every now and then, where I have to try and pick a movie in between their choices. And this was a really fun one. The movie I picked for the Star Pick recommendation, stay tuned. It's a really great film. I don't think that many people have seen it, especially considering how many times this episode has been listened to and downloaded. Mm-hmm. I want to see the numbers rise up on Letterboxd for how many people have watched and reviewed it.
Yeah.
Because it's a really cool, fun, little, tiny espionage movie from the 70s. And so I want more people to check it out. Love hanging out with these guys. This is one of my favorite episodes I've ever recorded of this show. It's The Weekly Planet. And come check out my comedy festival show touring this year, VHS. Tickets are in the show notes to Melbourne Comedy Festival, Adelaide Fringe, Sydney Comedy Festival, Brisbane coming soon. Hopefully some more cities. But in the meantime, I'll see you at the movies, baby. And let's get into this great chat of some of the best movies, some of our favorite films from the Weekly Planet. And yours truly, me, Alexi Toliopoulos, a guy that loves movies. Hit the tape, Em. Gang, well, thank you for jumping into the last video store, Mr. Sunday Movies, James Clement and Nick Mason.
That's great to be here.
Weekly Planet Boys. Now we're spending a lot of time together at the moment.
I like this.
Yeah.
Because obviously you being in Sydney and us being where we live, let's not get too specific, Mason. It's just great to hang out.
Yeah, it's great to hang out. Yeah. Talking about movies, our shared passion and area of interest.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yes.
We can all agree to it. We know that we love movies. Yeah. But the cool thing about this show is that we get to relive our past.
Hell yeah.
And that's the cool thing about it.
That's right.
Reliving our past. And I know you guys grew up together. Did you guys used to visit the same video store? Would you go in together?
Oh, yeah. We used to frequent the same video store.
Wow, frequent.
And we'll say it. Was the Eltham Video Shop.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was an independent video store. Mm. It was right next to the charcoal chicken.
That's right.
You better believe it.
So you're going in, you're ordering your charcoal chicken, you're waiting for that rotisserie to make the full 360 cycle. You're choosing your films.
Exactly.
That's right.
Yeah.
Talk me through this store, because independent video stores are things that excite me most in everything.
Absolutely.
I would say inclusive of thrills of the Olympic Games. I'm more excited about hearing about the old school video stores.
I mean, it had the, you know, it had the standard selection. It would have had all your mainstream action movies, your rom-coms. I remember being very excited when, like, the very small selection of anime VHSs sort of started to pop up. And, of course, there was the section of, like, sort of pseudo-video nasties that I was always too afraid to rent, you know. Because it wasn't
Pumpkinhead
like...
Pumpkinhead 2 to 4. Yeah.
Maniac Cop, Eliminators, Rotor, you know, these kind you know, they were sort of like pseudo... Like, they had the... They were sort of like Terminator, but they didn't have the, you know, the seal of approval of, like, that
they
kind of thing.
They had
that
grubbiness
like,
about
They had
them.
The grubbiness, and I'm like, do I dare rent something like this?
Did you ever get a Pumpkinhead out?
I never got a Pumpkinhead out. But luckily now it's all on Tubi.
It's all on Tubi. Tubi is like the video store of the modern age. Like it's there. Is, all the grub shit is there. Yeah, you can find... I'll be honest, I get emotional thinking about Tubi. There'll be years where movies are impossible to find. You look it up and you go, wow, they've just got all of this stuff on Tubi now. Yeah. And they do it for free.
It's incredible, isn't it? I mean, it's good that somebody's like, these need to go somewhere. Mm-hmm. Somebody needs to see this.
Yeah, the internet needs a bargain bin as well. The dregs need to go somewhere.
There needs to be a streaming service that recognises there are movies that were made before the year 2005. Like, most streaming services are like, the only movie that came out pre-2005 was The Matrix. Mm-hmm. Wow. That's it.
Yeah.
And that was
just barely before.
Yeah.
Barely before. The times changed.
That was probably the year we met, actually. The year The Matrix
1999.
Came out. Yeah, I would say so, yeah.
Wow, that's the year you came online. You came out of those
pretty
pods.
Much.
You're like, exactly right. We're out here, we're here meeting on the Nebuchadnezzar.
That's it. I mean, because there was a store closer to where I lived. We did live in a similar area. Is this interesting? Look, that's not important.
I think it's fascinating. Okay, let's go deep into it. What streets? What were the streets like? Was there gum on the sides of those streets?
There was, again, like this local video place, you know, that it was unbranded.
Yeah.
And then my little brother racked up a bunch of fines, so I couldn't go back. Wow. And then I heard they closed down and they reopened as a Video Easy, and I'm like, all right, here we go.
We're starting fresh.
Clean slate, fake ID. New video card. Here we
With
go.
With these ones that are not like the chains, did you ever notice like the specific tastes of the proprietors coming through there? Did that kind of inform your taste?
I mean,
they'd
have an odd thing on the screen. You know, if you'd go into a Blockbuster, it's just whatever Fantastic Four movie was out.
Yeah.
You know, but
presumably either Fantastic Four or Rise of the Silver Surfer.
Sure, yeah. Exactly, yeah. Yeah, so it was normally something that I'd never seen or something I shouldn't be seeing, you know, up on the wall.
What were those little grubs that were always living in the toilet? What were those guys?
Oh, the Ghoulies?
The Ghoulies.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I remember distinctly a Ghoulies was on the TV one time, and I'm like...
Distinctly and stinky. Yeah, Ghoulies is whack. Have you ever seen Ghoulies?
I've never seen Ghoulies, no.
I saw it at a sleepover. I have no memory of it, actually. I still, even though I know I've seen the movie and I was disturbed as a child, I still can only remember that little green bald fella popping out of the loo.
Yeah.
His lovely little stripy top ensemble.
I remember one year at like a primary school sleepover, we all went to the video store to get something and we all wanted to watch Falling Down. Michael Douglas man at the end of his rope.
He's a hero and he's telling it how it is.
Young men looking to get radicalized.
You just read that.
And the guy, and this is video story, he's like, I don't think that's appropriate for your current age. It's
really?
He said
that?
But instead he recommended Army of Darkness, Evil Dead 3.
Oh,
so,
I don't know what you little good, freaks are going to like.
Pretty good call, but
Yeah, well, with the beautiful memories shared today, I'm feeling passionate. I'm feeling empathized to your experiences now. I'm taking on not just my own video store knowledge, but those of the nameless stores that turned into Video Easies at a certain point. Mm. They're all possessing me right now because we're going to go through your rental combo. We're going to talk about your new release film, then two individual favorites of yours each.
Absolutely.
And then I have an even harder thing of not just empathizing with one person, but empathizing with both of you to find you the perfect bespoke customized recommendation based on both of your tastes, your experiences, your lives, and in fact even your aesthetic qualities.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
I don't know if it'll come into play, but I'm trying to think about it.
I wore a t-shirt that reflects my choice. It's an old t-shirt. I shouldn't have worn it, but...
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
The older the better, I say. And you can use that in any context you want. All right, we're going to get into your new release film.
New release.
And I would say, agree with you, this is one of my favorite movies in the last few years. A film that knocked my dick into the dirt.
Wow.
We're talking about John Wick, Chapter 4.
Action.
Yeah.
That's right. I'm sort of surprised this hasn't come up before.
Me too.
And then I'm like, is this too mainstream of a choice? Mm. Is it? But it's...
Is it?
No, I don't think it's too mainstream of a choice.
Because we do not have a backup.
People have said Dune 2 twice.
All right, okay, great.
Not even Dune 1 once?
No, Dune 1 has never come up.
Unbelievable. Oh,
wow. Because Dune 2's out. It's been replaced.
Yeah.
Usually I say older the better. I'm going to change my context. It was cool.
I mean, we're not talking about John Wick or John Wick Chapter 2 or John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum, the only one with the subtitle.
Yeah.
We're going straight to 4.
I think it's the best one.
I think it's the best one also.
I was kind of over John Wick at the end of 3. I'm like, I get it. I get it. I've seen everything that I could see out of this movie. And seeing the runtime before I saw it, I'm like 2 hours and 30 minutes or whatever it was. I'm like, this could not possibly sustain itself for this length. But boy, does it. And then some.
I agree with you. I think it is... The thing that really excites me about the John Wick films, I think they get exponentially better. I think each one grows, and you're seeing Craig Stahelski's prowess and technical filmmaking and storytelling abilities grow unfathomably each time. And I think with John Wick Chapter 4, he delivers what I think is truly one of the greatest action films in the Western canon.
Yeah,
like, agreed.
I think is exceptional. Even just the fucking lighting of this movie is fascinating and beautiful.
I at the time, when I came out of that movie at the cinema for the first time, the first word that I thought of was sumptuous.
Whoa.
It's a sumptuous movie. Look, the lighting, like, it's neon soaked, and it's just all the sets are incredible, and all the costumes are incredible, and everybody's got an incredible look to them, and just it's interesting because when this franchise shifted from the kind of fairly grounded John Wick 1 to the kind of...
You're talking about like the expansion of the world and the coins.
The coins and the nonsense. Yeah. The coins and what the coins represent.
Is what I love. Yeah. The nonsense. We're going, we're going to have an insane amount of exposition to bring you into a world that is just cocoa, canunu, bananas.
When it sort of tipped over into that, I'm like, I'm not sure how I feel about this.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed 2. And then I think 3 sort of ends in the same place it starts, so it's not really...
He's on the run.
He's on the run and he's wounded.
He's fallen off a roof.
And then he falls off the roof again. And then, at the end of 3, I'm like, I don't
the
know if
the classic action trope falling off a roof.
That's right. Falling down, as it were.
Oh, of course. You know? Falling down from the roof.
From the roof.
That's the full title.
That's right.
As used in overseas markets.
Yeah, that's right.
The book it was based on, after all.
Mm, Greeks falling down off the roof.
Now, a very niche reference.
Very
niche, but I'm delighted by it.
So when going into 4, I had that realization of like, I think it is the there's a few things that have sustained this franchise, and one is the insane mythos. I think if it was just, you know, a guy getting revenge and then finding an excuse to get revenge 3 more times in a kind of this mundane world of like warehouses and vans and...
You're talking about like the Taken franchise, basically.
Exactly. I'm talking about the Taken franchise and every other kind of...
Every other old man action movie of that beautiful
the
genre.
The geezer teasers.
Yeah.
But yeah, like the things that that have sort of let this franchise sort of expand to the way it is the law and the full it's the commitment to the law, and it's Keanu Reeves' absolute commitment to the role and to the physicality of the role.
Yeah.
You know, he's absolutely sincere. He's not quipping.
The guy's never told a lie on screen.
Yeah.
You watch him and you go, this guy's being honest. You could put a polygraph, hook it up to the DVD player and you go, we're reading this as true.
That's right.
Nothing is coming off wrong here.
Absolutely. And you know, he's had a long career in absolutely committing to the role, like from The Matrix, where he, you know, everybody involved spent 6+ months training to do that. And it was the same for these movies. It's just he's as I understand it, in John Wick 4, you know, by this point, he's not just sort of miming doing the action. He knows exactly what he's doing. Like, there are moments in that movie where, you know, he goes to fire a gun and it jams, and he'll like change the magazine, or he'll sort of he'll check the gate and kind of, and he's not, they haven't planned that. That's what happened. That's what happened on the screen, and they just had the confidence to let him go, no, I can fix this. This is... you know.
Yeah. You didn't go, somebody.
Someone fix this.
Please, can I get a help you?
Yeah.
I wonder if, James, you're the same as me, whereas I think the thing that I love most about John Wick Chapter 4, even compared to the rest of them, is I think it's kind of the thing that we've been getting at is the first one is a simple story.
I mean, it was supposed to be like straight to streaming, wasn't it?
Yeah,
as well?
Straight to streaming.
Yeah. Scorn, am I correct in saying? Oh, yeah, it might have been Scorn.
Oh, okay, right.
And they go, who knows what Scorn is?
John Scorn.
We've got to go and call it, John Wick.
Yeah.
After all, John Carter did so well. So right. We've got to get the John franchise
and
out.
And the Spiderwick Chronicles went really well, I think, so we combined them.
We could combine these things together to make one behemoth of a franchise. But I think the thing that evolves really nicely is like the simple story then becomes more complicated in the way it's told.
Yeah.
But then in John Wick Chapter 4, you kind of see these influences, these really disparate influences come together in a really cohesive way where you've got the kind of physical action, not even comedy, but the physical action of silent cinema with like Buster Keaton and stuff going in there, like the stunt actions of that. But then being infused with like, I guess for me, one of my very, very favorite films is like The Warriors. Always with John Wick Chapter 3 was more like The Warriors. Like it feels like it's just like this one streamlined, one crazy night journey through New York City. But then you have this thing that I also think is excellent, but it ruins the momentum of it where he goes, well, let's go to Morocco and hang out with Halle Berry with some dogs that eat dicks.
Absolutely,
and you're like, let's go there. But I think this one captures the insane vibe in a hugely encompassing way, but it does feel like one crazy night.
Yeah, it really does. And I think also there's not a lot of movies where I can go like, oh, I can name four action sequences or set pieces from it. Well, you can with John Wick. You know, there's the, you know, the blind guy at the club. That's one, isn't it?
That sure is.
God, I hope so.
Yeah.
Sometimes he's in a kitchen. He's all over the place, that guy.
The Arc de Triomphe, the stair fight, obviously, the showdown at the end. The top down one where he's got the dragonfire gun, whatever it's called. There's five. I named five. So, you know. Yeah.
And that's not even to name the duel that completes the film.
Well, that's it. Exactly. Yeah. And just a great twist on that as well. Just him killing his way up the ranks until he's at the top, which I don't think he is. I think there's still more people to kill.
Thank goodness. We've got John Wick Chapter 5, and I pray there being a second subtitle back into those.
Oh, please. It is confirmed, isn't it?
I think so. Yeah, I think just recently they've been confirming it.
Are you sold on any of the, like the expanded universe stuff? Because I know there's a show set in the 70s.
Worth seeing with Mr. Melanie Gibson in it. I've not had the chance to watch it. And by saying I've not had the chance, I've elected not to watch it just yet.
Yeah.
Have you gone in on it?
I've seen it, yeah.
Yeah.
It's okay.
It's okay.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. Sometimes that's all you need is okay.
That's right.
Yeah, okay is a green light these
days. That's exactly right.
And the ballerina is coming out at some point.
Oh, yeah, with Ana de Armas.
Yeah. Set between 3 and 4 or something. But it doesn't matter. Can be set any time.
But it's interesting. You mentioned the Buster Keaton element, and you know, and the stair fight.
Feels so Buster Keaton.
So Buster, he's selling with such sincerity, and you believe in him, and you feel for him. And then, of course, there's a moment, spoiler alert, where he gets to the top of the 1,000 steps.
Mm.
And then he just gets 300 front kicked all the way back down.
He falls for so long.
And it's been so good at building the momentum of time and you understanding the real time that's eclipsing at this point. It gets it just right and you feel it and you feel that exasperation when he's like, has to do it all over again.
Mm. Yeah.
I think that this is one of the true great masterpieces of action cinema.
Completely agree.
The only other thing I'm going to add on to this is a thing that I really love the John Wick franchise does is that it kind of understands, I guess, the building blocks that it comes from. I got emotional seeing fucking the greatest direct-to-video action movie stars get the call-up to the big franchise. It's Mark Dacascos in John Wick 3, Parabellum, and then Chapter 4, we've got Scott Atkins.
Yeah.
And there's something about that. Like,
there's that sequence as well. Yeah, with the big guy. Yeah,
he's the big guy fighting in the club. Scott Atkins fighting in a fat suit doing, like, I guess, I think a Russian-German-French accent.
Yeah.
I'm like, thank you.
Got the big teeth and
the big
heads. And he's moving kind of like, it is kind of like, Tom Cruise in Tropic Thunder.
It is,
yeah.
It's the same thing, but not dancing. He's fighting.
Yeah.
And I think there's something about that that I actually feel, you know, the same way I feel about Tubi. I get verklempt. I get emotional. It's beautiful.
And to bring in Donnie Yen as well, you know.
That's, absolutely.
Of course, Donnie Yen and doing his signature thing of being blind. Yeah. Being blind in a Western-made film.
God, yeah,
he loves being blind, doesn't he?
Yeah. He loves it, and he's believable. Where do you think John Wick Chapter 5 is going? Because we're thinking about it's from what we understand, it's been announced.
I mean, some have said he battles his way out of hell.
You're taking the supernatural.
I'm not against it because you know it feels right in terms of he is, you know, he started out in a very grounded world, and sort of grey and it was a real world probably, but then it's sort of gone its way. It's become this huge Technicolor, amazing. You know, it is it's a fantasy world. Everybody's trading gold coins for knights at the inn and all this sort of stuff. And it's like, well, why not?
You could make it like he's in a coma and he imagined it. You could leave it ambiguous.
Yeah, that's true.
I think that's beautiful. I'm picturing something really incredible in my mind right now. I think that the hotel, whatever, what's the hotel place called? Is it just called the hotel?
The Continental.
The Continentals. I think the Continentals should have branch in hell as well.
Oh yes. My
God. And he can leave messages to go to the other ones back in the real world.
Yes.
And they can bring back Lance Reddick. As a CGI monstrosity.
Thank goodness. That's what we need.
They planned to kill him in that franchise, right? Before he died.
I hope so. But I hope they don't bring it back.
I really hope not.
Do you know who I'd love them to bring back?
Yeah.
If he's in some kind of purgatorial afterlife, fighting his way back to Earth, I don't think he should come back alone. I think he brings back his lost wife, and the dogs from the first movie.
Yeah, huh?
I think they all coming back, and then that's the end of the movie. They live happily on Earth, or they go from hell to heaven.
Yeah,
like we're talking. What's the Robin Williams movie?
The
Robin Williams kills God.
The one where everything's painted.
What dreams may come? There we go.
Yeah, now that's it. Is John Wick Chapter 5? What dreams may come? that's what I want. Everything's surrealist and painted.
Killing his way into heaven.
Well, that is John Wick Chapter 4. Anything else that you'd like to add, my gentlemen?
The guns aren't real.
From a safety aspect. Yeah, that's really interesting.
And again, you know, so for people who don't know, Chad Stahelski was Brandon Lee's stunt double on The Crow.
On The Crow.
So he's sort of spent his career sort of working to a point where there aren't any guns on set because it's, you know, even a gun that fires blanks.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, all the guns in John Wick 4, there's a lot of airsoft guns, but there's also a lot of guns that they're called plugged guns.
Yeah.
And they, like you can imagine, there's no hole in the barrel, but you just pull the trigger and like the action works and the casing flies out. And then the rest of it is visual effects and, again, people selling it.
Mm.
Yep.
You know, and that's not like visual effect muzzle flash is not uncommon in movies now. But the difference is in John Wick, you can't tell
exactly
because they've really made it the best they can possibly do it. You know, there's so many of those directed, you know, streaming or whatever movies where you're like, oh, that's clearly fake.
Someone's copy and paste a little flame.
But I think if I didn't know that going into it ahead of time, I would never have figured that out. No. It's just incredible.
Yeah,
and it's just
also, like, even if you could tell, why not? Because then everybody's just that little bit safer.
Exactly.
There's nothing wrong with that at all.
I think that's it. I actually think they should have all guns, cap guns. And with a little orange clip on the end just so you all know everything's all safe.
One of those guns you stick into a potato. You pull out a little bit of potato and then you shoot a little bit of potato. Yeah,
Smud gun. Or big, beautiful Nerf guns.
Oh, my God.
Or in my dream world, they're all needless from the Halo universe.
Hello.
Yeah, even more dangerous, actually. All right, we're going to go into your weekly choices right now.
Weekly.
Now, this is a beautiful stack of films you've got here, my friends. Beautiful stack of films. I think, James, we're going to kick things off with not just the film that you... Wow, there's a bag being lifted open.
No, this is from your video store.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Wow, it's from... Wow.
That's right.
Wow.
It's True Lies on VHS. You can VHS hold that, Mason.
Thank you.
Have a look.
Wow.
It's real.
Action.
It's real and it's
very
chipped.
Real.
It's chipped.
God, the
it's
resolution
greasy.
Is so good on this.
Oh my goodness.
And the tape
goodness.
Is real. You don't even have to look inside.
Open the tape and let's unravel it.
I hope this is cash.
I think that this is one of the defining films for people like
a crook porno. It just says here,
a video naughty,
not a crook porno. Just to clarify.
Wow. Yeah. True Lies. Thick thighs. I like it. That's right. This is like such a defining like film for people like around our age group of just like exploring a little bit further of just like not just franchise action cinema, but I think getting like, for me, it felt like one of the first adult naughty.
Because of the scene, right?
Because of the scene, and it played on TV a heck of a lot. And well, let's just say the door locked in my bedroom a heck of a lot watching it on my tiny little TV.
What I find fascinating about it now, like going back, it's really the end of an era for Arnold.
Yeah.
Because it's probably... No, it's not probably. It is where he peaked.
Yeah.
Like, not financially, but it's like the last collaboration that he had with James Cameron. I know he like produced on Terminator, but you know, he was at the peak of his power. Like, James Cameron also had all the lessons that he'd learned, he'd brought forward into this kind of screwball action comedy. Mm-hmm. Like, half of the movie is following his wife around because he thinks she's having an affair.
Yeah.
Like, that's the front half of the movie.
And it's got a little bit of that Hitchcockian, like, mistaken identity in there, the funness of that buddy cop comedy with all, like, or buddy comedy, I should say, with, like, the Tom Arnold of it all.
Exactly. James Cameron knows exactly how to, well, not like Tom Arnold, obviously, because it's the best thing he's been in, but Arnold as well. He's always known exactly how to use him.
The double Arnolds.
The double Arnolds.
And, that's it. This movie. This is a kind of movie that makes you go, hey, Arnold.
It's like that, isn't it? Yeah.
I learned this week. This is a remake. I didn't know that.
Of a French movie?
Of a French
movie?
Film called La Totale. And I guess the reason that that one hasn't, you know, jumped to worldwide success is because they didn't realize what James Cameron did, which is it's way funnier to have like a guy who's meant to be an undercover operative, but it's the biggest man you've ever seen.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
they made the fatal mistake of not casting Tom Arnold in their movies.
Yeah, exactly right.
I just love that like there's inclusions that Charlton Heston is in this.
Yeah.
And like he's got an eye patch and an attitude, and you know, like, oh, this guy's been killing people for like 60 years and now he's like, he's a
desk
dog.
And now he's in this movie.
Now
Charlton Heston is in this movie. Yeah.
But I think you're right. It's like the pure understanding of like, it is one of the last times where Arnie feels like a true collaborator with someone and someone kind of carving the material and matching it to him perfectly.
Even like understanding his humor and delivery.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a perfect action movie. And again, like John Wick 4, you can name all the action sequences. Mm-hmm. And they're all incredible.
Horse chase.
Mm-hmm. Bathroom fight. They did it first before Tom Cruise. The bridge thing, where the bridge is sometimes a miniature bridge.
Bill Paxton punched in head in car.
Exactly,
in dream sequence for 3 seconds.
Oh, he's incredible. He's so good in this. Just so slimy and pathetic. And
Everybody's great. As I understand it, the studio didn't want Tom Arnold because he'd recently been divorced from Roseanne. And that's box office poison because Roseanne is...
She was the draw, right?
Yeah, she was America's sweetheart at the time and still is as far as I know.
Yeah.
But
well, you know, America's sweetheart, a country with a high corn syrup fructose problem.
Yeah.
A little too sweet.
That's right. But he fought for him and I think he's great. I think they're a great pairing. I'm sort of... It's a little bit disappointing that they've never worked together.
Well, they talked about doing a sequel, and it was kind of going to happen.
Even through more lines.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It was obviously he did Titanic after this, James Cameron, and then 9/11 happened, so that delayed it again because there's always a terrorist element to it. And then you know Arnold becomes governor, and then they push it out further, and James Cameron's doing Avatar. It's just not going
to
happen.
Tom Arnold is also probably not in the positions to be making these to the degree as possible.
But if you ask him in like an interview, he's like, "Yeah, we talk about it all the time." Like he would saw off his.
We got a Slack channel. We talk about True Lies every day. I think the way around it is they keep on threatening to do triplets instead of twins.
Oh, of course.
And they keep on going, let's get Eddie Murphy to be the triplet.
They do keep threatening. I like the way you framed that. Yeah.
They're threatening it. I can get Tom Arnold as a triplet.
Yeah,
yeah, sure.
He goes, I'm actually more from the Danny DeVito end of the spectrum, you know?
Right, yeah.
I got a little bit more of that DNA in me, so that's who I am.
Yeah. There's also a TV show which I've never seen. From a few years back.
Are you serious?
It's American. Yeah. Yeah.
Who's in it?
That's a great question.
Don't know. No one's ever watched it.
Yeah.
It's never been seen.
It's people I've seen.
It's actually not lost media. It's just unseen media.
Yeah, that's right. I want to say, it's like, it's up there with like the new MacGyver TV show or how they did Lethal Weapon again. you know, as a TV show.
Leave that. And that only exists because there was controversial news stories about cast members on the show.
Oh, that's right. They fired the guy who Mel Gibson plays.
For being more male than male.
I
googled True Lies TV show and I got True Lies the movie. So even Google doesn't want to admit this show exists.
I think we've been incepted by a memory. Can I ask you, why is it that True Lies was the film that you immediately were like, I got to grab this one off the shelves?
Well, first of all, we're looking at the first two Terminator movies. We have a series called Caravan of Garbage on YouTube.
Check it out.
Check it out.
Who are you pointing at?
The camera, the audience.
The camera's in front of us.
And
he's pointing directly at an audience member.
That's right.
Forcing him to watch the Caravan of Garbage.
And just getting on that James Cameron kind of, on that role, we also looked at Aliens as well. Mm-hmm. And we've looked at The Abyss before, and this is kind of the natural progression of that. Mm. And also, it's not something that James Cameron does do humor and action well, but he's never quite combined them like this. Is just a very compelling narrative, and it's just a very funny movie. And we haven't even talked about Jamie Lee Curtis, who's fucking incredible in this movie.
Incredible physical performance
so
as well.
Funny, yeah.
I think he's really good at utilizing stars, understanding their star power, but then also understanding what is beyond their star power. Like, I think about her in this movie, Jamie Lee Curtis is really funny. Mm-hmm. She's also great at playing in peril and against peril. Mm-hmm. But then here he's able to kind of understand her in different ways, like how can we utilize her? When I think about, to me, the absolute pinnacle of that for James Cameron, Avatar 2, The Way of the Waters, where he goes, Sigourney Weaver.
Oh my God, yeah.
A woman, in my estimation, 78 years of age is my guess. Maybe I'm being too generous there, and I don't know which way.
Because you do like
them
older, don't you? Yeah.
Yes, of course. I say older's better almost every time, no matter the context. But let's get her to play a teenage supernatural being with paranormal abilities and connections to the lords and gods and everything and to Mother Nature. And I'm watching it. I'm going, not only do I believe this performance, I think this is the best character I've ever seen in a fantasy science fiction film. I'm so moved by it. And he just goes, well, yeah, she's been a 14-year-old girl once in her life. She can do it again. And he somehow got it to work. And I don't know how that
is. It sounds insane. It sounds like it. But you're right. You don't, when in that movie, which I quite like. I know people are kind of down on the Avatar movies. I particularly like the second one. But you don't. You stop thinking about it. You're like, yeah, this is a 14-year-old alien who can commune with the planet or whatever that movie is about.
Yeah, I think it almost comes back to the thing we kept on talking about John Wick 4, it's momentum. Mm. When you're building momentum, and he's a genius at building momentum, you're on the ride, you're in there with the characters, you're feeling the same things the characters are feeling. You buy the stuff that could be cliche because you go, I'm in the realm, I'm in the movie, and it just works. And I think True Lies is one of the great examples of that in his career.
Yep. A couple more things I just want to mention. Because it's of an era of filmmaking where there's certain things you can't hide, Arnold's stunt double is really obvious a lot of the time. It's just like a guy who's like in prosthetics or like a weird mask. And he's just, it's very obvious. And with like Terminator 2, there's a few moments where they go back and they fix that. And with this, they just didn't.
You see him on the motorbike, the one I always think about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's just amazing. And also his line at the end where he shoots the terrorist through the building with the Harrier jump jet, which is also the same jet from Avengers 2012, that the Hulk and that. Oh, wow. They fly in front of it. But anyway, he says you're fired and shoots him, but like, it doesn't even make any sense.
Fired from what?
Exactly. You're not his boss. He doesn't work for big terrorism. Well, I guess he does work for big terrorism, but you're not the head of big terrorism. So it's just like, it doesn't even.
Maybe there was a subplot where the terrorist worked at Harry Tasker's fake computer company or something like that. And then he'd give you like, well, you're fired, you know.
You know, there's a thing called citizens' arrest. I think they should be called citizens' firing.
That's
as well.
True. Okay,
just go in and fire somebody if they really do deserve it.
Yeah.
They send someone in. Can I ask, is True Lies just before The Last Action Hero?
Last Action Hero was the year before. And that's another thing I think was really interesting. Mm. Actually, because I said, I want to watch The Last Action Hero. I messed it up. I meant to say this.
Yeah.
That's interesting because that's what this is trying to be. Mm-hmm. Like, it's more tongue-in-cheek because there's, like, cartoon characters and it's set in a fictional world and whatever. But it's supposed to highlight everything that Arnold is and kind of parody that and kind of flip it. But it doesn't work. It kind of falls down in a lot of places and the action isn't great. But this is that just presented in a much better way.
They got James Cameron to do it.
They got James Cameron. That's a really good idea that they did that.
Yeah, the only guy more powerful than John McTiernan in that era. We've got to go James Cameron.
Yeah. I should check if that's actually true. The Last Action Hero came out before. I'm pretty confident.
I said that.
You said it with confidence.
I did, yeah.
We can, I mean, some.
It did come out the year before. It did come out the year before. Let it be known, no one lied, no one gave misinformation. Everything was accurate right now.
And that's they both had terrible Super Nintendo adaptations. So that's
Oh my gosh.
That was the era.
That's the era. And that's what I truly believe. I still remember the cover for both of those, the Super Nintendos. And I remember them with perfect wear and tear on those lovely. Why would they put things in cardboard boxes that teenagers and little boys are going to handle? They're,
it's a great question.
They're always destroyed instantly.
Yeah, look, you photocopy the booklet, you put it in a plastic case, and you hand it over.
Exactly.
You know, that's the way to do it.
That's it. You got to get the freaking laminator out there, man. You got to get a laminator out there for all that. Well, that is True Lies, one of the greats of Arnie's career. And let me say, the spelling of True Lies is True Grenade Lies. You got to put the grenade emoji in there if you're writing it now. All right, Mesa, you have got a film here. We're talking 1998. We're taking a little sojourn 4 years in the future.
No Super Nintendo adaptation here, alas. But I've got a physical copy as well. This is James. He's done a gag.
No,
I brought the correct movie.
No, I also brought the correct movie,
which is the John Frankenheimer movie from 1998, Ronin.
I also bought the
James
movie
brought
Ronin.
47.
No, it says Ronin.
Ronin with a blue tape on it.
Okay, that.
How awesome would it be if I go, damn, that was going to be my recommendation for you? I want to give you a freaking Keanu Reeves movie that's also called Ronin.
And it's real. The disc is really in here.
You're so full of lies.
I've never
you?
Met a guy that's utilized having access to a home printer so perfectly before.
This is a real copy that I took the disc out of. Anyway, sorry, go on.
Wow.
From John Frankenheimer, one of the greats.
That's exactly.
Of, I guess, paranoid thrillers, action cinema.
Yeah. And car chases, too. Car racing generally.
Yeah. Is Ronin one that persists for you? Is this from your childhood that you bring into
life? This is. I saw this in cinemas the year it came out. Mm-hmm. And this is
the
probably.
Agreement.
Yeah.
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 Wow.
Sorry, go on.
It seems that you guys mean a lot to each other. I'm becoming a therapist on this side now.
I guess. But I mean, we've grown apart a little since he did that 47 Ronin bit to steal my thunder, that dog. And I reckon it's pretty much a yearly rewatch for me since it came out on home release. This is a real comfort film for me. Mm. There's a lot of people organizing, doing the logistics of a heist in a warehouse.
Oh yeah,
very just having a little drink in a Parisian pub.
Oh,
it's
yeah,
just nice. But boy,
the people of France don't think it's nice. They're getting killed and run over and shot.
True, yeah.
It's quite the shame.
Yeah.
It's quite the shame. The people of Paris do need to survive, in my opinion.
I watched, before coming to this, I watched Siskel and Ebert's review of this movie from when it came out, and they both gave it a thumbs up, and they did point out that perhaps if this did occur in real life, hundreds would have been, it would have been on the news that hundreds were killed. You
absolutely,
know?
People
who did not deserve it.
I did a similar thing where I reread Margaret and David's transcript of this, review for this.
Nice.
David gives it 4 stars, Margaret gives it 3 stars.
Okay.
And I think the thing that I pick up most from this is they're both like attracted to the thriller aspects of the heist of it, the kind of Parisian aspect of it. But for David, who loved the early films of Frankenheimer, like The Manchurian Candidate, 7 Days in May, and my absolute favorite Frankenheimer film, which is Seconds, he feels like this is a return to form after many years out in like the journeyman wilderness.
Yeah, yeah, he had a sort of meteoric rise, and then it sort of, he dipped for a few years and then kind of...
He peaks back up here and don't worry, mate, he falls back down.
Yeah, I was looking afterwards.
You like reindeer games. Yeah.
And then he died?
Yeah, very shortly after that. Yeah,
yeah, he does. Ronan kind of is right in between two insane movies, The Island of Dr. Moreau.
Oh, that's right. He came into fix that or finish.
He came in to finish it, yes. Yeah. And he did fix it. You watch it and go, wow, this is a movie that's really effective and cool and not weird and not horrifying and not wrong and not really desecrating any kind of things. One of the most upsetting things ever made. but he does The Island of Dr. Moreau. Then he comes back and does Reindeer Games right after Ronan.
Mm.
I don't remember much of Reindeer Games. Is it good?
In a word, fuck no, dude. No, it's a bizarre movie.
Fucking
because
Ben Affleck, early 2000s. This, yeah, the sum of all fears, paycheck. What was he doing?
It's like, getting a paycheck.
And Gigli. There we must be Gigli.
Daredevil.
I think it's so interesting. It's like such an oddity that in between these two things, he's able to just recapture all his powers, all his magic to make kind of the perfect late 90s heist film.
Not underrated when it came out, but it was underseen, I think. It didn't do well at the box office. I wonder if I think some rewrites were happening, you know, immediately before filming and during filming and et cetera. And I think it's probably, you know, I think he was probably elevated by the cast. You know, it's a great cast.
Yeah.
De Niro, of course.
Yeah. Natasha McElhone.
Yes.
Jean Reno. Oh,
all the greats. Sean Bean is kind of a...
He just comes and goes.
Yeah.
God, that's a great character. Yeah. I thought he was going to pop up or betray or something.
Well, see, that's the thing. As I understand it, there was going to be an element to that, but then in rewrites that, like, there was at one point, you know, his fate was going to be he was going to get captured by the IRA at the end.
Okay, and, yep.
You know, killed or what have you. But in this, they're just like, what if he just left and he was a loser, you know, kind of thing. So it's a great cast. I think the script is really strong. Mm. You believe in the characters. David Mamet has a rewrite on this, but he's not credited. He's credited to somebody else, Richard Weiss, I think.
Oh wow!
Because he doesn't.
Dickie Weiss.
He has some dangerous
pair of words to put next to each other.
That's right. He doesn't take credit if he's not the main screenwriter or something. Yeah. That was his rule at the time.
Mm.
I don't know. Just great. And I think based on that great dialogue, I think there's some really quotable lines in it. There's a moment where Sean Bean's character asks De Niro if he's ever killed somebody, and he's like, I hurt someone's feelings once. I thought that was, you know, a lot of fun.
He's like that guy when we went to high school together. Like, that's a fun little moment.
Yeah.
Just lying his way, you know, across France and killing.
There's a lot of killing in it. I think that Jean Reno and Robert De Niro, that's the kind of thing that I always remember. I always felt like their chemistry together and their pairing, their partnership in it. I thought it's one of those surprises, like how great it works.
Mm-hmm.
And even when I think about it, I go, it shouldn't be that surprising because like they're two excellent actors, but they feel so different from each other as performers because they're both a bit subdued, but I always feel like Jean Reno is so good at playing into persona, whereas Robert De Niro is a bit of someone who shies away from having a kind of movie star persona.
Uh-huh.
And except for Midnight Run and then everything he'd made after Meet the Parents. But sure, this is just before that. Year. It's 1 year, I think, Meet the Parents.
I think that's probably... This is my favorite era of De Niro.
Mm-hmm.
People would say this is...
Have you seen the 70s? Did you know he made movies in the 70s?
Yeah. Some people will say after at a certain point he stopped trying.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know.
Yeah. But have these people seen War for Grandpa or whatever it's called?
That's exactly right.
God.
Yeah, and just really great action set pieces and great chases that are all being done for real, in some cases with the actual actors in behind the wheel.
I always remember that sequence on the windy road where he shoots the rocket launcher at the car and it flips. And it's like, it's not, now it would be a nothing moment because there'd be 40 cars flipping.
Yeah.
But you just, the grind and the... And you even see it like when they do the Paris Underground and they go and you see like cars flip and then like turn in and they'll just like go around them just at like the last second. It reminded me of the first Mission Impossible, like that paranoia, the look of it.
Oh,
and also like an early, whoever directed the first Bourne, I can never remember because it's not.
Doug Liman. The first Bourne.
It reminds me of that first Bourne movie
as
well.
One of the reasons I chose this is because it's not as, like, when you think of John Wick 4 or True Lies, there's a certain, like, caricature to them.
Yes.
Like, they're sort of heightened and they're in their own sort of, it's a sort of a fantasy world.
Mm.
And this is sort of very, it's more grounded, it's more mundane, but it's not unspectacular.
No.
You know what I mean? You know, there's there's a lot going on.
He's very good at finding that grounding, Island of Slumero aside.
Yes.
He's very good at doing that. Like, when I think about Seconds and The Manchurian Candidate, they're both like these kind of paranoid thrillers that have something a little bit more heightened outside of the world, like the idea of these indoctrinations in Manchurian Candidate, and then this more overtly science fiction idea in Seconds. Mm-hmm. And I think that he's very good at finding the cinematic language to communicate those in a way that can be subdued. And this was one of the films I was toying with as a recommendation for you guys.
Okay.
But I'm just going to say it out loud now, and I'm just going to throw it away, and it's a recommendation, but not the official recommendation.
This is a free one.
This is a freebie for you guys in case I fuck up the big one. He made a film in 1964 called The Train. Have you either of you seen The Train?
No, I did see this when I was going through his filmography, but I had no idea.
War.
The Train is quite excellent, and the best way to describe it is it's Die Hard before Die Hard.
Okay.
But it's set in World War II with Nazis and with like art heisty type stuff.
Okay. Like, so Die Hard's like this in a building.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about, right?
We're no longer vertical, we're going horizontal with Train.
Oh my God.
It's very much that with Burt Lancaster in that role, but... God, I should have just given you this as a recommendation. Sounds incredible. The pressure's back on me.
It really is. Right. Yeah.
It's kind of perfect. Uh-huh. Yeah, well, I'm going to try and top it.
Yeah.
Don't mind if I fall short.
I don't know if you mentioned it. You might have mentioned in passing. Did you? Because he directed French Connection 2, right?
Yeah.
Is that,
is that him or was that?
I think it was
him. Yeah.
Is that anything? Because I read some reviews and a lot of people are like, it's good, but it's not like...
It's, you know. Yeah, it's...
Because Gene Hackman's returns and...
Yeah. I've seen her a few times and like I love French Connection. Obviously, I'm a film nerd, so I love the French Connection. Mm. French Connection 2 is kind of like, it's a bit of a bummer, but it's interesting to see what they how they're beginning to conceptualize what sequels are. Because there are sequels before that. Like there's lots of films from like the 30s and 40s that have sequels, but they're a little bit more rehashing or something like that. I think in the 70s when they're like the American New Wave, when they're trying to figure out sequels again, there's something quite interesting about that. So I think there's value to watching it. But the only thing I remember about it is they force Gene Hackman to do heroin in like one of the first scenes. And like then they also force him to – like they kidnap him, force him to do heroin. And then the actual torture is they force him to – what is it called when you like you – when you have the heroin and you're trying to get it out of your system and you're going crazy
Go cold turkey.
Oh, okay. That's right.
Cold turkey, but there's like the term as well where he's unfortunately – come to me. It will never
they
come to
me. They say it in Trainspotting, probably.
They say in Trainspotting, where they're like, he's got the thing. And I actually would like if 365 people can message me the words that we can't think of. If no one can, I don't want it to be a post. I want it to be individual messages to all of our inboxes.
I
want to
say the bends, but it's not the bends.
It's not the bends.
It's the bends for heroin.
It's not the yips.
And I'm trying to think, is it relapsing? But it's not relapsing, but it's like in the area of that.
And even if you get it now, it's too late because people have already messaged
us. They've already messaged us. Another great Frankenheimer is Black Sunday, which is kind of a terrorist attack at the Super Bowl.
Oh.
Yeah, and that's quite good. That's quite good. Robert Shaw and Bruce Dern.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah,
1977.
Okay. Yeah, really fun movie. Mm. Really fun movie. We could have just done the whole Frankenheimer
story. Absolutely, yeah. I'm an idiot. I'm sorry. I should have said true lies.
Oh, my Lord.
Staff pick.
Okay, I'm going to go into my brain again right now. I've already gone through my heart. Those were the heart picks. Now I'm going, brain and heady picks.
He's in his mind palace, or mind video shop.
I'm in my mind. Well, technically, we're all in the mind video shop.
That's
right
so
now.
True.
It's true.
Even the dear listener. I'm trying to go, what in the mix of films, where do we want to, what flavor of these three films would you like to be the most prominent in your recommendation?
I like the idea of Ronin. Like, to be honest, revisiting that, I was like, God, this is good.
Okay.
Revisiting, I might not have ever seen it. I can't remember. But I'd seen enough of it to be like, ooh,
We're going to go to Ronin. We're going to 1973 with this film. This is another film that kind of takes a little bit of the mold of a heist film and it communicates through a heist film, has the feeling of that. But instead of it being a heist, it is Assassinations. And this is a film from 1973 called The Hit.
Crime.
Exclamation point by Sidney J. Fury, who's another, like Frankenheimer, a great journeyman of cinema. He's mm-hmm. made films in almost every type of genre. Mm. I'm going to give you a little bit of a synopsis. A federal agent whose daughter dies of a heroin overdose is determined to destroy the drug ring that supplied her. He recruits various people whose lives have been torn apart by the drug trade and trains them. Then they all leave for France to track down and destroy the ring. And let me tell you who that person is that is recruiting these people. The assassin that wants to kill the drug ring. It is Billy Dee Williams.
Oh, my God.
Damn.
Yeah.
Pre-Empire Strikes Back Billy Dee Williams.
Pre-Empire Strikes Back Billy Dee Williams. And I think
William December Williams. Full name. Full name.
That's one of the
Don't message me. That's true.
And then not it's not just him there. He's joined by like kind of an interesting eclectic mix, a lot of character actors, mm-hmm. different groups. Two of the people that are with him are an older couple that were espionage spies earlier in their life, but their son was someone that who also came to be a heroin addiction.
So he's just kind of not stuck with, but these mm-hmm. are the people who have the drive.
People that have the drive, and because it's a rogue mission.
Yeah.
This is like a rogue nation that they're going after right now.
They're doing a rogue nation.
They're doing a rogue nation. They've actually
just checking all the boxes.
They've taken Ghost Protocol on this. elected to go Ghost Protocol. So it's this old couple, and I think that's the thing that really excites me. There's this really unassuming, short, old couple. Mm. They're like little pudgy. They've seen their best days, and the way that they utilize them to enact these assassinations, it's so thrilling and so exciting. I don't want to give anything away because it's the most unique thing in this film. The other unique thing, one of the other people he recruits is played by Richard Pryor, who plays an ex-Navy SEAL who joins them. But it's also Richard Pryor doing this kind of hat on, hat off persona thing, is a way I put it when comedic actors kind of go, he can speak as Richard Pryor, basically doing bits and being funny, but it never stops being a real life person.
Okay.
He's still doing, it would be the same way that Richard Pryor communicates.
Pre, like, see no evil, you know, hear no evil, whatever.
Pre that.
Pre like Superman 3.
It's very early in his career. And I think that this is like quite a beautiful film. It meanders a little bit for its runtime, but there's like real power here. And that premise gives you like a great emotional buy-in. So it has this feeling of heist films. The way that it executes at the end, it almost feels like the kind of mass sequence, the baptismal fire in The Godfather.
Okay,
like it's kind
right.
of intercut with each other as they all build to each other. It's this great clandestine operation. It's these effective assassination. There's pain and beauty in all of them coming together and how they're kind of laid out on the table. It grounds all their skills, removing kind of any surprise or doubt. And that's in particular with the older couple, like the way that you kind of believe their skills. It's quite a marvelous trick. But the best thing about this film, and it's going a bit back to the Ronin, it's going back to that Parisian, this kind of French landscape that they're in, the French cityscapes. I really zoned in during this gang's like last individual quiet night before they enact this plan. These quiet moments in Marseille, it's one night before the job. The old married couple are in bed together, just enjoying each other's company, holding each other. And then there's this moment that got me where one of the gang members is just out on the streets on himself, having a lonely moment where he's just eating a sandwich at the counter of a French deli. And it's one of the greatest moments of cuisine on screen I've ever witnessed. And by that point, it's when I go, I'm straight up in love with this movie.
All right.
Yeah.
And there's some good, there's great balances of humor in there as well, not unlike True Lies, but also quite unlike True Lies.
Sounds a little bit unlike True Lies. I love the idea, like when you, the way you describe that group, I love a movie or just a character who, they're not the right person for the job, but it's fallen to them.
Mm.
So it's just like, well, I'm just doing this. I'm the person, you know. Ideally, this would be someone else, but it's me.
They're not here,
It falls onto them. I think it's really, really that. I didn't even think about it before, but Richard Pryor and Tom Arnold, it's a bit of the same DNA of using a comedic actor.
Same parents.
That can play to the same pairing. Now that, if only we could get them together. If only we could get them together. But there's something in that that just like, it speaks to, in a weird way with like these heist films, like even Ocean's 11, like getting like comedic actors, it grounds them by going like, yeah, there's funny people. There's a whole group of people together. Yeah. One of them should be funny.
People are funny.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess that's a David Mamet on Ronan. Yeah. He gives a few funny lines.
That's right.
Well, dudes, thank you so much for joining me in the last video store, picking up a beautiful selection of movies. Your new release of John Wick, Chapter 4. We got True Lies in there. We got Ronan. And we're hitting it up with Hit! Exclamation point. When you Google it, you got to put the exclamation point.
Now, let me ask you this. Yeah, where the heck are we going to get this, Alexi?
Well, it's available on VHS. It's available on Blu-ray in the Sydney J. Fury box set released by Imprint, which I own, and I will lend you that copy from our shelves. Also, this is an accessible film. You can rent it on Google Play.
Yes.
You can rent it on Apple TV. Ooh. You can rent it on YouTube. And dare I say, you can also come and borrow it from the Last Video Store.
It's got everything.
Single option out there. But I would say this, like, it's a meander. It's a meandering film.
I like a meander.
Put it on a Sunday afternoon and you will be swept out into Marseille.
I wonder if there's maybe like a new audience for meandering movies. Like, because now everybody's, you know, on their phones.
Everyone's on their phones, Mason. Mm-hmm.
Perhaps, you know, people would appreciate going back into a, you know, an era where movies kind of meandered for a little bit.
Yeah. I think that's good. Yeah, I think it's a good film to have your phone in your hand for a little bit.
Great. I can't put it down. So
I was going to say Oppenheimer, but that kind of moves it a clip for the first hour. But then, there's a bunch of meandering in that. The Dune movies, which I know you've talked about.
Of course, we've talked about
space
them a hell
meandering,
a lot.
Spice meandering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's that scene in Rebel Moon 2 where they all sit around and go, oh, yeah, I know my story.
Let me tell you my story. I can't wait to watch the Rebel Moon. I've slowly been convinced I have to watch every version. I've never seen any of Rebel Moon.
Who's convincing you of this?
Oh, the world at large.
The world at large
is convincing me about it. Yeah, but that's it, guys. Thank you for joining me. Of course, you've got the Weekly Planet podcast on the Great Podcast. I was just on to talk about Alien Romulus.
Thanks for being there.
That was an absolute blast having you on.
And actually, we're probably getting blasted. People going, this is not the best movie ever. Unfortunately, that's why we rated it.
As of so far, the comments have been very positive. People specifically to you are like, this guy, he's got it.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I'm getting praise, but I'm also saying you guys are wrong about the movie.
We definitely get that.
We weren't the guys who should have been doing this podcast. We were just there. You know what I mean?
That's right.
It's like one of those heroes you like.
That's exactly right.
And of course, Caravan of Garbage on YouTube. Yes. I'm obsessed with these. I've been enjoying you guys going through the Alien franchise, especially talking Jean-Pierre Genet's Alien Resurrection. That's so fun.
Then he made Amelie.
And then he made Amelie. Yeah.
Look, we don't have the most original takes.
And then
takes.
He made Micmacs.
Oh, yeah. We don't have the most original takes, but sometimes we'll point out a guy in the background that's a bit funny looking.
And there's a lot of funny looking guys in that.
Oh, my God.
They're not in the background. We're talking foregrounds. We got that guy from Delicatessen, another movie made by him.
Yeah,
that little weird guy. Yeah. Ron Perlman, a big weird guy.
He's a big weird guy, yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me, guys. Anything else you want to push out the return shoot rats towards?
I think you covered it, yeah? That's the things that we do?
Yeah.
Podcast and YouTube?
A lot of good movies out there.
We're not some video store that closed down.
Yeah, I don't know what it is now. It might be a fish and chip shop or something.
There you go. Might be
another charcoal chicken. Might be competing charcoal chicken store.
Check it out.
I'm not sponsored by Tubi, but get on Tubi.
Get on Tubi. Tubi is a bastion out there.
Let's encourage it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd take their money, but they don't have any. So I don't know.
We'll take their movies.
Yeah, we'll take them. Yeah.
Perfect. Well, thanks for joining me, gang.
Thank you.
And be kind and rewind those movies.
Right. Absolutely.
The Last Video Store.
So that was our chat with Nick Mason, Meso, and Mr. Sunday Movies, James Clement. Now, Em, you've been saying...
I was just saying that because this is such a popular episode, especially on YouTube, we just constantly get new comments, even though this episode is quite old now. And they're all, like, inside jokes. Like, I have no idea what any of these comments mean. They're, like, talking about... killing people. They're
what the heck?
Not in a bad way.
They're going to kill me. they're saying big sandwich. They're saying big sandwich on there.
It's just stuff that they're like, I've never seen these guys' faces before. I'm like, I don't understand, but I think it's hilarious.
Always so funny because like they're on YouTube, but they don't put their face on YouTube. But they're on Instagram and stuff. But it's like, it's very funny. That's so funny you mentioned that. It's like, oh, people just don't know what these guys look like.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, dude, they're my friends.
Yeah. It's really funny. I like, and I don't understand any of the comments, but I like them. I'm like, hell yeah.
Well, that is this episode with the Weekly Planet. The movie we recommend to them is Hit, Track Down. It's such a cool movie. And I can't wait to get these guys back on. We couldn't make it work in the last couple of times I went down to Melbourne, but I'm going to be back soon recording some episodes. And obviously, these guys are my favorite people. It's like truly amongst my favorite people to talk to about movies. So can't wait. Adore these guys. In the meantime, check out my comedy festival show. Stay cool. Right now, Em and I are in a tiny little back room of the video store here recording these intros. There's no aircon. There's actually no aircon.
I'm so sweaty.
Look at the YouTube. Go down the YouTube. Look at the Spotify video. I am drenched in sweat. I'm wearing black terry toweling because it's a bit flowy, but then it actually traps some heat. Yeah. So I just every now and then feel a sweat bead dripple down my side.
Yeah, please please switch to video so you can see that if that's tempting.
Exactly.
You freaks.
Check it out. Love you, babes. Have a good one. Happy New Year. Enjoy movies. I don't know what to say. I've actually lost my mind.
It's like February.
I don't know what to say. Enjoy the movie. See you later, guys. Have a good one. Check me out. Go on Last Video Store but 2 to Instagram. I'm going to post some stuff about movies on there. I'm doing movie recommendations. See you later, guys. Hang up the phone already. You're going to hang up? Who's going to hang up? Am I going to hang up?
I'm hanging up.
You're hanging up. Okay, bye, guys.